Joshua chapter 22, I'll begin reading in verse 1. Then Joshua called the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh and said unto them, ye have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. Ye have not left your brethren these many days and unto this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given you rest unto your brethren, has given rest unto your brethren, as he promised them. Therefore now return ye, and get you into your tents, and into the land of your possession, which Moses the servant of the Lord gave you on the other side Jordan. I'm sure you're familiar with this story. When they crossed into Jordan, right before they crossed, they had already conquered some land, which would be on the east side of Jordan. And this 2.5 tribe said, hey, how about we have this land? It's a good land. And Moses said, well, you can have the land, but you got to cross over. You can, your wife and kids can stay here, but you got to cross over, and you got to fight until the other side is conquered. And that's what they did. Now getting ready to cross back over to Jordan, and that's what we're talking about. Verse 5, but take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you, to love the Lord your God and to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments and to cleave unto him and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went into their tents. Drop down to verse 10. And when they came into the borders of Jordan, that's the river, they're getting ready to cross over, that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben, and the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, those 2.5 tribes, built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see to. And the children of Israel heard say, behold, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built an altar over against the land of Canaan, the borders of Jordan, at the passage of the children of Israel. And when the children of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered themselves together, Shiloh, to go up to war against them. Now, what a weird turn of events. But this is what we're brought to our attention here in Joshua 22. So approximately 7 years have expired since they've crossed into the promised land. So 7 years prior to Joshua 22, that's where we have the story of Jericho and all that. They cross over Jordan, starting with Jericho. They conquer. They have their southern, well, kind of in the, a little bit in the middle, and then the southern campaign, then the northern campaign. And now the tribes are going to be given a lot of land, not abundance, a section of land, a lot. Okay, and so they're going to have their own area, and as a tribe, they're going to finish conquering that area. So these 12 tribes have fought together up to this point as one large army. Going forward, they're going to be kind of like each tribe of their own army, but at this point in time, they have fought together. And they've done this now for 7 years. So in soon, as you read through Joshua and into Judges, they're going to be given their area, their lot, and it's going to be their responsibility to finish a conquest. So that means these 2.5 tribes are going to go to their lot, their inheritance, that section that was given to them. So if you look with me at 22, look at verse 9, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned and departed from the children of Israel out of the land of Shiloh, which is the land of Canaan, to go into the country of Gilead, to the land of their possession, whereof they were possessed according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moses. So that's what they're getting ready to do. Now, these 2.5 tribes, now think about this, they've lived among and fought with the other 9.5 tribes for 7 years. 7 years. They fought together and to some extent lived together. Where they're kind of moving as a big group throughout and conquering Canaan. So they've done this now for 7 years. And at this point in time, these 2.5 tribes are getting ready to leave. And to my mind, I imagine a big goodbye maybe. Maybe they had a big party. I don't know. But, you know, they're like, let's say, you know, someone who's staying, they see the other people leaving. Hey, Bob, yeah, it was nice fighting with you, man. You know, it was great. You know, man, we're going to miss you. Maybe we'll see you on Christmas or Easter. It's a joke. They're Jewish. They don't celebrate Christmas or Easter. All right. Sometimes the jokes work. Sometimes they don't. So anyways. So they say, Bob, yeah, Bob, it was good, man. Man, we love you, Bob. There's no one like you, Bob. And then a few minutes later, let's go kill Bob. I mean, it's almost how it was. It's like, you're like, whoa, what happened? I mean, they're all lovey-dovey, great, everything's great. And then all of a sudden, one situation occurs, and now it's go and kill him. Verse 12, and when the children of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered themselves together at Shiloh to go up to war against them. Now, it all happened because of a misunderstanding. And they're ready to kill each other over a misunderstanding. One side is convinced that they're right. Now watch, and they're willing to risk generations of conflict over this wrong assumption. If they go to war with each other, it doesn't end. It doesn't. First of all, it doesn't end well, and it probably never ends, because eventually these 2.5 tribes, and they're going to get some people back, and then they're going to fight against the 9.5, and then the 9.5 is going to get some people back, and they'll fight. And so you have this civil war about to break out. They just fought together, and now a civil war is about to break out over a misunderstanding. And the sad thing is this, because it's a misunderstanding and they go to war, everyone who dies is part of the people of God. Everyone's an Israelite in this battle. It's good guys really fighting good guys, and only good guys are going to be dying here. So what does that mean for us? Well, I wonder, and I don't know how to, I can make some guesses about it, but I wonder how many homes have been divided like this over misunderstandings. That misunderstanding led to an assumption, and that assumption led to division. And every casualty in that warfare inside that home, every casualty was a member of that family. So what we see in macro, in a large way in this text, we can often see in the micro, in a small way, inside of our homes. Now, fortunately, in this account here, in this situation, this misunderstanding didn't lead to war. It almost did, but it didn't. And the reason it did not lead to war is because someone, now watch, this is key to understanding where we're going to go next, because someone decided to seek clarity. Before I kill you, let's talk about it. And that kept them from killing each other. Someone said, hey, wait, just stop for a moment. Why don't we just send someone to talk about this and really see what's going on here? And so there was a misunderstanding, there was a wrong assumption, but someone decided to seek clarity, and that saved many innocent lives. Now imagine if they went to war. Israelites killing Israelites, all because they misunderstand what's happening. And it may be generationally creating this conflict that may never come to a peaceful end because of it. But someone said, stop, wait, let's talk, and it prevented all of that. Go back, look at 22, look at verse 13. And the children of Israel sent unto the children of Reuben, to the children of Gad, to half tribe of Manasseh, and to the land of Gilead, Phinehas, very important, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and with him 10 princes of each chief house, a prince throughout all the tribes of Israel. Let me just stop for a moment. We say 9.5 tribes and 2.5 tribes. Half of the tribe of Manasseh stayed on one side, half of the tribe went on the other side, which means not only you have Israelites fighting Israelites, but you have one tribe fighting itself. You have a tribe divided. So back to this. And with him 10 princes of each chief house, a prince throughout all the tribes of Israel, and each one was a head of a house of their fathers among the thousands of Israel. This is this group they're sending to have this talk. And they came unto the children of Reuben, and to the children of Gad, to the half-tribe of Manasseh, and to the land of Gilead, and they spake with them, saying, thus saith the whole congregation of the Lord, what trespass is that ye have committed against the God of Israel, to turn away this day from following the Lord, and that you have builded you an altar, that you might rebel this day against the Lord? That's the accusation. Look down to verse 21. Then the children of Reuben and the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, answered and said unto the heads of the thousands of Israel, the Lord God of gods, the Lord God of gods, He knoweth. In Israel, He shall know if it be in rebellion, or if in transgression against the Lord. Save us not this day, that we have built us an altar. In other words, if this is what they've done, that we have built us an altar to turn from following the Lord, or if to offer thereon burnt offerings or meat offerings, or to offer peace offerings thereon, let the Lord Himself require it. Because all of that would have been wrong, God had condemned it, and there would have been reason to fight. But that's not what happened. That's what they thought happened, that's not what happened. God was very clear for the Israelites. When you go in there, there's one place that you're going to have the main altar, one place you bring your sacrifices. Don't do it anywhere else. And if you do it anywhere else, that's rebellion and people need to be put to death over, which is what the 9.5 tribes thought. And if we have not rather done it for fear of this thing, saying, in other words, here's really the reason. So if it's the wrong reason, then so be it. We deserve death. But here's the right reason. In time to come, your children might speak unto our children saying, what have you to do with the Lord God of Israel? For the Lord hath made Jordan a border between us and you. You children of Reuben and children of Gad, you have no part in the Lord. So shall your children make our children cease from fearing the Lord. In other words, this river would create this barrier, and now we'd have two nations. Your children would reject our children. We don't want that. We want to remember that we're in this thing together. Therefore we said, let us now prepare to build us an altar, not for burnt offering, nor for sacrifice, but that it may be a witness between us, which was fine. They were allowed to do this. He said, just basically a big statue, a big memorial. And you and our generations after this, that we might do the service of the Lord before Him with our burnt offerings, with our peace, with our sacrifices, with our peace offerings, that your children may not say to our children in time to come, you have no part in the Lord. Therefore said we that it shall be when they should so say to us or to our generations in time to come, that we may say again, behold the pattern, the altar of the Lord, which our fathers made, not for burnt offerings, nor for sacrifices, they're very clear about this, but it is a witness between us and you. God forbid that we should rebel against the Lord and turn this day from following the Lord. To build an altar for burnt offerings, for meat offerings, for sacrifices, all those have been wrong, beside the altar of the Lord our God that is before His tabernacle. And when Phinehas, the priest, and the princes of the congregation, the heads of the children of Israel, which were with them, heard the words that the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, the children of Manasseh spake, it pleased them. In other words, they're like, whew, we missed that one. Man, that was... We were close to pushing the red button there. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, said unto the children of Reuben, children of Gad, to the children of Manasseh, this day we perceive that the Lord is among us, because ye have not committed this trespass against the Lord. Wrong assumption. Now that they had going into it. Now you have delivered the children of Israel out of the hand of the Lord. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and the princes returned from the children of Reuben and from the children of Gad, out of the land of Gilead, unto the land of Canaan, to the children of Israel, back to the 9.5 tribes, and brought them word again. And the thing pleased the children of Israel. And the children of Israel blessed God, and did not intend to go up against them in battle, to destroy the land wherein the children of Reuben and Gad dwelt. Verse 34, love this verse. And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad called the altar Ed. You know how many hard words, names there are in the Bible? Ed. It's like, really? Someone said, I'm tired. Even they had a hard time pronouncing it. They said, we just call this one Ed. For it shall be a witness between us that the Lord is God. All right. So there was a misunderstanding based on the wrong assumption that was about to lead to a complete civil war here. Now, let's think for a moment. Could you imagine the confusion on the face of the 2.5 tribes when this group of people showed up basically saying, what are you doing? Why are you rebelling? Why have you turned from God? Do you know we're getting our swords and our spears and we're going to come and kill you for what you're doing? And these 2.5 tribes got to be saying, what? What are you talking about? They said, the altar! You built that altar! And that was wrong! And they're like, wait a minute, that's not what happened. They're kind of dumbfounded about, I mean, they are clueless that 9.5 tribes are getting their swords out and ready to kill them. They're just going on their merry way. And then here comes this group that says, hey, you know we're about to kill you. What? We just said our goodbyes. So the 2.5 tribes had to be quite confused over the misunderstanding. Could you imagine the relief of the leaders of the other tribes when they learn the truth? They're like, because we really didn't want to do this. Could you imagine how this would have never been solved if they had fought before they talked? If they had started fighting, it wouldn't matter how much they talked after that. Because once blood is shed, it's revenge time. And they're going to fight back and forth. If they had not talked, if there was not clarity, the misunderstanding would have led to much, much worse things. So what kind of lessons can we learn from this? Well, I have for you three that I want you to consider from this account here in Joshua 22. So let's go back to Joshua 22 and let's draw some lessons from it. that we can think about in our own homes. When they came to the borders of Jordan, at verse 10, that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben, children of Gad, half-tribe of Manasseh, built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see to. And the children of Israel heard, say, behold, the children of Reuben, children of Gad, and half-tribe of Manasseh have built an altar over against the land of Canaan and the borders of Jordan at the pass of the children of Israel. When the children of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered themselves together, Shiloh, go up to war against them. Point number one, very simple. You will be misunderstood. You will be misunderstood. The 2.5 tribes did nothing wrong, and they're about to be attacked by 9.5 tribes. Because the 9.5 tribes misunderstood what they did. You will be misunderstood. Imperfect people make... Now, and this time I'm not talking about the 9.5 tribes. I'm talking about the 2.5 tribes. Imperfect people make imperfect decisions that are misunderstood by other imperfect people, the 9.5 tribes, who then make their own imperfect decisions based on that misunderstanding. Now that goes on. We're imperfect people making decisions. And those imperfect decisions are misunderstood by other imperfect people who then make their imperfect decisions. And if we don't stop and talk and get clarity, all this imperfecting of going on is going to create a lot of needless conflict. Now, this is not to give someone an excuse for their misunderstanding, but to remind us that we are all capable of misunderstanding. Now, there should be trust within the family. And sometimes they say, well, they just need to trust me. Okay, there should be trust within the family. But as a person who's trying to have the best home possible, we need to understand that people are not always going to understand us. There's going to be some times we're going to be misunderstood. Now, we can either get mad at them we can say, well, they just need to understand me better. Or we can say, is there something I can do to help people understand me? Because really, I don't want to have to fight the 9.5 tribes. I don't want division. I don't want to fight. I don't want to fuss. Now, it is true that they maybe should have checked into it better before they're, getting their swords and spears out. But I don't want to have to fight back. I don't want to have this war going on. So what could I do if I'm going to be... Now, here is the... What I'm trying to lay a thought to you. If I am going to be misunderstood, and I am, what can I do to help prevent people from attacking me? You say, well, they need to trust you. But what if they don't? Well, they need to seek clarity. But what if they don't? What can I do to help not to be misunderstood? That's the question. So here's what I'm going to give you. One way to limit being misunderstood is to make sure we live transparently. Now, this does not mean that people need to know every little detail of our lives. But our motives and reasoning should be clear. You'll see these words, this word clear and clarity and transparent, used multiple times in this lesson. But our motives and reasoning should be clear so it is easier to understand our actions. Make it easy to be understood. People are going to miss, no matter, okay, if you are perfect, will you be misunderstood? Yes. Even perfect people are misunderstood. But maybe if I work harder, I'll be less misunderstood. Possibly. So I'm going to try to be transparent. I'm not going to have hidden motives and hidden reasonings. I want to be able to explain what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. Say, well, I get tired of telling people things. Yeah, I know how it is. I do too. But sometimes putting the extra effort in talking prevents all the effort that goes into the fighting. So I want to be understood. But I know I'm going to be misunderstood, so I'm going to try to live transparently. And by that, again, it doesn't mean every single detail of life that people need to know every little thing, but they should know the big things, the motives, the reasoning, what we're doing, why we're doing some things, so it's easier to understand what we're doing. Go back with me to chapter 22. Look with me at verse 10. When they came into the borders of Jordan that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben, children of Gad, and half-tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see to. Now, it seems like this idea, as far as the way it's presented to us here in Scripture, it seems like this idea is almost a spur-of-the-moment decision. We can pretty much, I think, understand and agree that they didn't talk to it about the 9 half-tribes, because the 9 half-tribes had no idea what was going on. And so, maybe somewhere in the journey towards Jordan, maybe when they got to Jordan and trying to, you know, think about getting across, maybe someone said, hey, you know, what happens when we get to the other side? Are we going to be our own country? No, we're still part of Israel. Well, you know, this big river here, we're going to be over there and they're going to be over here. What if they forget about us? And maybe someone said, hey, what if we build a big memorial here? Then anytime people look at memorial, oh yeah, we have 2 and a half tribes on the other side. So it seems like there's a spur of the moment of thinking going on here. In this spur-of-the-moment decision, now think about this, in this spur-of-the-moment decision, no one considered what it looked like. Because everyone of the 2 and a half tribes knew what they were doing. They knew what they're doing. They knew why they were doing it. But they never thought about what does this look like to them. And this is where transparency comes in. Just because you are clear in your motive and reasoning, you cannot assume that everyone else understands why you're doing it. They're going to misunderstand, and now there's a... So this is why we're talking about being transparent. Be willing to explain things. Be willing to tell people things. Again, I understand, you can't tell them every little detail, okay? But there, you can give them the general motives, the general reasoning, the general thoughts. Here's what I'm doing. Here's kind of why I'm doing it. Therefore, transparency requires us to look at our lives, now watch us, through the eyes of others, and thus try to prevent their misunderstanding. It has to do with, and we say it different ways, you know, live above board, live above suspicion. You know, be careful of things you're doing. You may not be doing anything wrong, but if someone's seeing what you're doing, they may misunderstand and assume some bad things. So, you know, live above board. You know, people shouldn't have to, you know, question or guess or wonder, you know, what you're doing or why you're doing it. Let me show you a couple of verses. Hold your place in Joshua. Proverbs, if you will. Proverbs 22. Proverbs 22. Look at me at verse 3. Verse we've quoted often in some different applications, and it applies here. Proverbs 22, verse number 3 says this, a prudent man foreseeth the evil, I'm thinking about what could happen here, foreseeth the evil, hideth himself, in other words, does whatever is necessary to prevent that evil from coming into him. But the simple pass on or are punished. Well, and I'm not trying to be unkind to the 2 and a half tribes, but in a way, the 2 and a half tribes are being very simple about what they're doing. They're not being very prudent. They're not thinking about, okay, no one seemed to say, you know, building an altar for a burnt sacrifice is death penalty. And maybe someone said, of course, we're not going to do that. But did they know we're not doing that? No one's ever going to think we're doing that. Really? They're sharpening your swords right now because that's exactly what they thought. Let's look at another place. Go with me to Proverbs 28. Proverbs 28. Not as clear of a verse, but I do think it has some application here. The rich man is wise in his own conceit. He's full of himself. He knows what he's doing. He doesn't care. But the poor that has understanding searches him out. But that other person is looking at him thinking differently about him. The rich man's full of himself. I know what I'm doing. But the others look at him and say, well, I don't know. You're kind of devious there. And so the idea is to live above suspicion. So instead of complaining about being misunderstood, maybe you should work harder at being transparent. So that's number one. We will be misunderstood. So I can't force everyone to do what I want them to do. I've tried. Doesn't work. Anyways, moving on. So you can't force everyone to do what you want. So you got to say, okay, what do I need to do? Okay, what can I do? Well, I can try to be transparent. I can try to be above board. I can... You know, take the initiative. Think about, okay, what does this look like to other people? And if it doesn't look good, maybe I should think about how I'm doing this. Even if I'm not doing anything wrong, I don't want people to think I'm doing wrong. All right, so that's number one. Number two, so we've got a second thought about this. So you will be misunderstood. Now watch this. Number two, you will misunderstand others. You will misunderstand others. Joshua 22, look at verse 16. Thus said the whole congregation of the Lord. What? Now here's, okay, again, think about it. This is an actual event that's happening. This group of people from the 9.5 tribes walk up the 2.5 tribes. The 2.5 tribes are only saying, did we forget something? Maybe I left my cell phone. Maybe they'll bring my cell phone to me. Some people do that. They leave their phone everywhere. And so maybe they're bringing something. Maybe we left something. Maybe they have like, you know, this letter, like, you know, this big card. Hey, we already miss you. Maybe, you know, they're thinking, wonder what these people are coming to tell us. Oh, it's going to be fun. We haven't seen them in like a few hours now. And they show up and notice how they begin this discussion with them. Okay? They walk up and say, what trespass is this that you have committed against the God of Israel to turn away this day from following the Lord and that you have built it to an altar that you might rebel this day against the Lord? They're like, whoa, where did that come from? It's immediately, okay, immediately, the it's an attack on them. Let me see this. Look at verse 18. But that ye must turn away this day from following the Lord, and it will be seen you rebel today against the Lord, that tomorrow he will be wroth of the whole congregation of Israel. I mean, they're just on him and just condemning them, and there's no, you know, what are you doing? There is, you're doing wrong, and you shouldn't be doing wrong. It's an immediate accusation. So you will, and this is what's happening here. These 9.5 tribes are misunderstanding. So sometimes you're the 2.5 tribes, sometimes you're the 9.5 tribes. Now that brings us back to this fella that I had mentioned about Phinehas. Phinehas is important in this story because Phinehas is a very godly man. Very godly man. Let me show you what I mean by it. Hold your place in Joshua. Go with me to Numbers 25. The fact that Phinehas is involved tells us that it could happen to any of us. So this isn't just a bunch of yahoos who have nothing better else to do but to accuse people of things. Okay, this is a godly man who's very serious. When Phinehas walks up and says, what evil are you doing? You better take it seriously because this is a very serious person. Numbers 25, look at verse 6. Now this happened back in the days of Moses, but notice what happens here. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brother a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses, in the sight of all the congregation. This is a very wicked thing. We won't get into it. It's a very wicked thing that's happening. In the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of congregation. And when Phinehas, same fella, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation. Everyone's like this. I mean, they're like, what is going on? This is such a wicked act this guy's doing. Phinehas is not looking. Phinehas is acting. And when Phinehas, the son of Aaron, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation, took a javelin in his hand. What do you think's going to happen? This ain't the Olympics. Nope, not the Olympics. And he went after the man of Israel into the tent. We won't go into detail, but you can kind of picture what happens here. And thrust both of them through. One strike went through both. And thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly, so the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. They're like, we can't believe what's happening. And Phinehas says, it ain't happening. It's not happening. And they're like, okay. Phinehas took care of it. So Phinehas is a serious person, a very godly person. So if a godly man like Phinehas is capable of misunderstanding someone's actions, everyone in this room is capable of the same. One way we can be more charitable to those who misunderstand us is to remember all the times when we misunderstood others. And if you sit here tonight and say, well, I've never misunderstood anyone, well, then we probably need to have a different conversation about either honesty or about perception. All right? It is possible, now watch this statement, it is possible to be absolutely sure of something and still be absolutely wrong. Well, I'm sure this is the case. Well, Phinehas was, because Phinehas walks up and says, this is what you're doing, and this is wrong, and bad things are about to happen to you. And they're like, whoa, wait, whoa, whoa, Phinehas, put down the javelin, man. Let's talk for a minute. Okay? It's not what you think is happening here. So it's possible to be absolutely sure and to be absolutely wrong. The existence of the altar was a fact. That was true. The reason for the altar was an assumption, which is what got them in trouble. They were so sure of their assumption, they're already making plans for war. Yet, in all of this, this 9.5 tribes, they were wrong about that assumption. So when it comes to making a decision about dealing with someone, always seek to err on the side of grace. Because you're going to misunderstand people at times. Err on the side of grace. Now watch this. This is not what we as manly men want to hear, but we as Christian men should want to hear. It is better to be too patient, too long-suffering, and too kind than to be too little of those things. Again, hold your place in Joshua. Go with me to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. And look with me at verse 19. James 1, verse 19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness, and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls. But be ye doers of the word, not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any man be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he's like the man beholding his natural face in a glass, for he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he be not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man should be blessed in his deed. If any man among you seem to be religious, and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Pure religion, and undefiled before God and the Father, is this, to visit the fatherless, widows in their affliction, keep himself unspotted from the world. So different perception. Okay, there are times that javelins have to be used. But we ought to be, that should be the last thing on the list. Of the things we're trying to do, kill them with a javelin, should be close to the bottom. It's better to be too patient, too long-suffering, too kind, than too little of any of those things. Err on the side of grace. Some people say, well, especially guys, oh, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy who's, nice and kind and thoughtful and considerate. Why not? Was not Jesus that way? How did Jesus treat you? First time you sinned, did he like kill you immediately and throw you in hell? Or was he long-suffering? Right, there's a lesson to be learned there. Now, think about this statement. We'll move on to the last lesson. It is better to regret being too gracious than regret being too harsh. I would much rather look back and say, you know what? I was just too nice to that person. I just waited too long. I was too patient, too kind, and it came back and bit me. I'd rather do that than look back and say, you know what? I jumped to a conclusion. I jumped down his throat. I jumped all over him. And now I have no opportunity to help this guy because I broke that relationship. Man, why did I do that? Okay. If I'm going to regret something, I want to regret that I was too kind to someone. Waited too long. Tried too hard. Then I jumped to a conclusion and jumped on them. So you will misunderstand others. And then we give you the obvious one, back to Joshua 22, verse 12. We won't read the whole thing. We've read it multiple times, but we'll just reference the verses. Back to Joshua 22, look at verse 12. When the children of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered themselves together at Shiloh to go up to war against them. And the children of Israel sent to the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, half-tribe of Manasseh, into the land of Gilead. Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and with them these other people. And they came and they started talking. Now, they didn't talk nice, but at least they were talking. So number three is this. Talk it out before fighting it out. The thing that prevented unnecessary bloodshed was that decision to talk before they got into the actual fighting. That decision, this decision to talk first, that decision prevented generations of needless pain over that misunderstanding. Now, when we say talk, sometimes we misunderstand what that means. So, well, we'll talk it out and we'll all get together. Maybe not. Maybe talking out, maybe you were right. Maybe you talk it out and say, you know what, I was right the whole time. But wouldn't you want to know that you're right before you just jump to that conclusion? An assumption, I should say. So watch this. This type of talking may not bring agreement, but it should bring clarity. You should know for sure. Now, in other times, it may bring agreement. Like in here, it brought agreement, but it may not always bring agreement. But it's always best to talk first. As I've told you before, there are several people I look to as my spiritual mentors. My pastor when I was a kid, Barry Darnell, thank you. I was getting there. I was going through a list of names. It was coming to me. Brother Darnell, Brother Hiles, others who've been really great mentors. But there's one who's had a profound effect in my life since I was a teenager. That's a prophet by the name of Bugs Bunny. A lot of things I quote Bugs about that I don't know. I find a lot of things applicable to life. In this one cartoon, it was rabbit season, duck season. And they're fighting back and forth, and Elmer Fudd is trying to figure out which one to shoot. Finally, they settle on it's duck season. And now they're arguing about shoot him now, shoot him later. And Elmer Fudd eventually decides it's duck season, so he has Daffy, and they're walking off into the sunset. He's going to shoot him later. Now, from that, I've always thought of when I'm dealing with people, you can always shoot him later. It's a great spiritual moment in my life. You can always shoot him later. I don't have to shoot him right now. I can wait. We can talk first. Okay? Now, you can always, now watch this, you can always talk to someone before you kill him, right? But after you kill him, there's no more talking. So why not talk first? You say, well, you know, we're going to have to fight about this. Okay, if you're going to have to fight about it, why not talk first? You may not have to fight, but if you do have to fight, it's best to make sure everything is said that needs to be said. So there's no misunderstanding, no wrong assumptions. We're clearly going to have to fight about it. So, okay, we're clearly going to have to fight about it. I won't go, and I told you, mentioned a part of this story before about, you know, I've gotten along with all my siblings for the most part, except for one towards the end, just a few years ago. That's my oldest sister. She's passed away. The only one of the six who's passed away so far. But I really never had really trouble with her, but I never really had a relationship with her. Most of my adult life, she was living in one part of the country, and I was living in another part of the country, and there was never any connection between us for various reasons. But towards the end, our paths crossed again for the first time like in 30 years. And it happened to be that she was doing something that was against my mom. My mom was against what my sister was moving in with my mom, and she was doing some other things. And my mom called me to take care of it and such. And I won't go into all the details. But it forced me to call up my sister and say, okay, explain to me what's going on. So I want to be clear about it. And she did. And what she said, exactly what my mom told me. And I told my sister, you can't do this in my mom's house. You're going to have to leave. Now, you got to understand, I had no right to throw her out of my mom's house. I had no authority to throw her out of my mom's house, except for I said, leave my mom's house. Leave mom's house. You cannot be living there anymore. She's like, woo, and I said, I called her name, and I said, you know, you're going to have to leave, or I'm going to come down there and throw you out. You got to make your decision. Well, we'll leave next week. I said, okay, because if you don't, then I'm going to come down and throw you out. Now, before I told him that, we had a conversation that we're both clear on that. We didn't come to agreement, but we came to clarity. So if I'm going to have to be mean with someone, I want to make sure I'm clear. Now, I'm not a big guy, as you notice, and I'm not really a mean guy. But if you take advantage of my mom, my blood gets boiling, and I'm going to do whatever it's going to take care of my mom. And so that's how I looked at it. And so I want clarity. I would like agreement, but at least I want to for sure have clarity. So which gives us this statement. It is best never to fight. That's the goal. That's what we're looking for. We don't want to fight. We want to be peace-loving people. But if we ever have to fight, if we ever do fight, both sides should be clear on the thinking behind the other side's position so that there's not an assumption, there's not misunderstanding. If blood has to be shed, let's make sure we're clear on why this is and why it's necessary. All right, let's bring it to an end. Misunderstandings within a home can produce divisions that create even greater pain and division. Let me say this again. Misunderstandings can produce divisions, and those divisions create even greater pain and division. So you had a misunderstanding, it caused a division, and what that division caused was even more pain and division, all because of that initial misunderstanding. Even if the original misunderstanding is ever settled, the other pain and divisions would never be. Let's say they go to war, 9.5 tribes against 2.5 tribes. And a big war entails. And let's say, halfway through this battle, a whole bunch of people dead, someone stops and says, "Wait a minute! Ed here, the altar, was never what you thought it was." I'm like, "Oh, I guess we can quit fighting." I mean, is that going to make all the dead people come back to life? Is that going to make all the hard feelings be put away? No, you have created pain and division that may never be put away because it started with a misunderstanding. So that's why we're talking about this. It is said, and this is interesting, the Hatfield-McCoy feud, which is somewhat famous, started over disputed ownership of 2 hogs. And all the different Hatfields and McCoys shooting each other and getting arrested. Now, even that is in dispute, whether that was the original dispute. They had a misunderstanding, and there's misunderstanding of what the misunderstanding was. But it did entail a lot of hard feelings and bloodshed over the years between those 2 families. So a couple of things by way of conclusion. You must make sure that you have clarity regarding any issue that will cause division within your home. Take the time, make the effort, get clarity. You can't unspank your child. You can't unyell at your wife. Okay. Get clarity before you yell at your child and spank your wife. I'm kidding. Just wondering if you're paying attention, that's all. A couple other things. Be committed to taking all the time and having all the patience that is needed for that clarity. Never operate from assumptions or what it looks like in your eyes. Let's turn it all the way back to us. Well, what if we're the one being misunderstood? Okay? This will require the other side to state their position freely and openly. So if you don't want to be misunderstood and misunderstanding is going to happen, don't make them have to struggle to figure out what you're doing. Have some transparency. All right. Well, that is our lesson for tonight. We're ready to pray.